Hey, what's happening? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is Thursday, September 29th, and this episode is brought to you once again by my fantastic sponsor, El Cajon Harley. If you want to get a Harley Davidson, look no further. I don't care where you live. You got to call El Cajon Harley. What are you doing? Give them a call. Get yourself a Harley Davidson. Any time of the year is perfect. Winter, summer, spring, fall, whatever. Get a Harley Davidson from these guys, man. They're sponsoring the podcast. How cool is that? They're keeping it alive. These guys are insanely cool. Check it out. They got the Road King. They've got the brand new CVOs with the 114. What are they calling that? The Milwaukee 8. Yes. Milwaukee 8 motor. You've got it. Turned into Brody Stevens mid-commercial. You got it. Anyway, I love these guys. They are definitely the perfect Harley Davidson shop. Southern California. Get your motorcycles from El Cajon Harley or get your bike serviced down there. And maybe you need tires, brake pads, or you want to fix your motorcycle up. Maybe you got an old bike and you want to, you know, make it look cool or trade it in. Get yourself a brand new bike. Oh, check out the Dyna S too, man. I've been riding the Dyna S. This thing has got fierce powder. This thing's got fierce power. Check out Greg Riley, my boy. He is the king down there at El Cajon Harley, and he's waiting for you to call. Tell him I sent you. And what else? They got helmets. You can get your bike serviced. You need some tires. I said that, right? You need tires? Well, you can't, I can't, you know, stress enough. Don't be riding around with shitty tires. You only got two tires on a motorcycle. What are you doing? El Cajon Harley. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and tell them you heard about them right here on Let There Be Talk. Anyway, I'm up here at Edmonton. Starting a little run here at the comic strip. And if you live in Edmonton, what are you doing listening to this podcast? Get out of your house right now and come down to the shows. Don't be missing me. And then I go home and when are you coming to Edmonton? Get down to Edmonton comic strip and come see me. Man, I'm out of it right now. I'm just cuckoo. I've been traveling nonstop. And I'm just like, man, where am I? What am I doing? I talked a little bit about the shark trip last Monday, and today is the shark episode. Sharky shark! I've said it over and over and over, and you guys probably hear it and go, oh, man, he's going to talk about Jaws again, but come on. If you're my age or 5 years younger or 5 years older, that fucking movie is monumental. Monumental, man. Came out in 1975. I saw it in the theater. It was a summer, June 20th it came out. And I remember waiting in a long ass line, had no idea what it was about, went solo, went inside that movie theater. I can still picture the outside of the theater. I can still picture the line. I didn't know why there was a line. There'd never been lines for movies before. Why is there a line? You know? And as soon as I sat down, I realized the film game had been changed. The film game had been changed and my life had been changed. And in my mind, from that day on, I was like, wow. I wanted to be each one of those guys. Well, not really Chief Brody. I never wanted to be a cop. You know, but I wouldn't mind being Hooper, you know, just some fucking rich kid out there in his yacht looking at sea life. I mean, you know, that'd been kind of a weird, different life, just cruising around. Actually, though, if I looked at it, you know, in reality, Quint is, of course, the man. He's a blue-collar, hard-working fucking dude. I mean, you know, what a fucking movie. That movie taught me a lot of things. It taught me my love of sharks and the insaneness of The Great White Shark. It also taught me what great acting is. It taught me what a great book Peter Benchley wrote. It just right there laid it out. Art for me. This is the high watermark of art. Jaws, Godfather, The Deer Hunter, Apocalypse Now, Rocky, Raging Bull. I mean, these films growing up, Cuckoo's Nest, it's just, they're just logged in my mind. And I just know all the lines from all the films, too. I go and see Jaws every year on the 4th of July at the Arclight. They play it. I go. I don't care what I'm doing. I go and see it every year. I usually go solo, just like the first day I saw it. And I just sit there, and every time, it never gets old to me. Never. Some clown was shooting around a review on Twitter a couple days ago. I don't even want to say who it was. It was some movie review guy. He was trying to, I don't want to give him any glory. He was trying to say how overrated Jaws was. It's fucking ridiculous to downplay the amazing acting alone. It's just stupid, you know? I got to tell you, if you haven't seen Jaws, there's still people out there that go, you know, I've never seen it. Just one night this week, fire it up, and don't watch it on a computer. Watch it on some kind of screen. Try to see it at a movie theater, actually. Like, it's pretty kind of easy to see it at a theater, I think, you know. Different theaters run these classic films. And go see it in a movie theater, you know. And the soundtrack. I mean, everything about it is just epic. I'm looking at the budget. It cost $8 million to make. That is so fucking funny. Grossed $260 million. Dick Zanuck crushed it on this, the producer. $260 million U.S. I mean, it's considered, you know, the first blockbuster ever. It's unbelievable. I love it. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about this was, of course, my love of sharks. And all my life, I just thought, you know, man, I would love to just, I wish I could go in a cage and see a great white shark. And that was really never an option. You know, you don't just know where sharks are. And you know, and if you happen to see one, you're probably about to die. You know, that's just the truth. And then around 2004, my good buddy Dean Carr, who I've had on this podcast, who is an unbelievable photographer and an incredible director. He's done so much stuff. He's worked with Slayer, AC/DC, Iron Maiden, Deftones, Dave Matthews. I can go on and on. Korn. I mean, you know, shitloads of fucking bands. He's made some of the best videos you've ever seen. I get a call from him, and he's like, hey, Dean Carr here. You want to go see some sharks? I'm like, what? Sharks? Where? He's like, we go, We take a boat ride out to the Guadalupe Islands, get in the cages. Shark. Go see some sharks. They go, oh, I'm fucking in. It was like 2004 or 2005. And I go out, and dream came true. Saw sharks. It was one of the most insane weekends of my life until a few days ago when I went out again. Decided to go again. I was like, I need to see that one more time, I think. And took a 20-hour boat ride out, which I'll tell you right now, there's nothing more boring than a 20-hour boat ride. Thank God it ends with great white sharks, because if it just ended with nothing, I'd be like, oh my God, fucking, this is hell. Took a 20-hour boat ride out, woke up at 6 a.m., got in the fucking cages. and waited about 30 minutes. Same thing as last time. Like, there's no sharks. This sucks. And then, boom, if you look at my Instagram, here comes the first shark. Turning the corner of the cages. Came right up to my fucking face. Clamped down on the cage. And I was like, oh, we're here. It's on. This isn't the movies. And then proceeded to see the most amazing assortment of great white sharks I think I'll ever see. I don't even think I ever want to go again because it was so epic that I'm good. I'm good on sharks, man. I don't ever want to go again and think, man, last time was so incredible. I say that now and then, boom, here, all of a sudden I'll go again. I don't know. That's how fucking much I love it. It's pretty fucking cool. That's all I can say. Met some great people out there. And, this podcast, I did it 200 miles off the coast of Baja on the front of the, boat at about 10 to midnight. Pitch black under the stars. I'd never seen so many stars. With sea lions in the background just making noise. Dean Carr comes on, and then a new friend, Ewan, is also a guest on it. He's a photographer for the San Jose Sharks. He happened to be on this trip. Hilarious. He also shoots the Mavericks, the big waves. If you've never seen Riding Giants, the documentary about the big wave riders, the Mavericks, it's one of the most incredible surfing films of all time. He shoots the San Jose Sharks, the Mavericks. He's also a corporate photographer for Clorox, shoots a lot of NASCAR stuff for him and stuff like that. So two incredible photographers on today and also incredible friends, and we discuss our trip. I hope you guys enjoy it. And if you you want to do the trip, hit up Dean Carr on his Facebook and go next year. It's definitely a bucket list for a lot of people. So you only live once, as they always say, and that gets used over and over and over, but you really do. Go see some sharks. Another sponsor here. A lot of people are loving my new stickers. I got the stickers fired back up again. All my stickers are made from Catatonic. Catatonic.com is your one-stop art shop. They do all my stickers, and they are absolutely incredible. They don't just do stickers. Go to their website, Cadatonic.com, Catatonic.com. They do all kinds of great art stuff. I love these guys. I've been working with them for a couple years. They can do 3D toy models for you. You got anything you want made into a toy, they can do it. They can design your stickers. They can do flyers, posters, shirts, whatever you need done. They can do it. They're the one-stop art shop. And I tell you, they have hit a home run with every one of my stickers. The quality is absolutely next level. And they're just great people. Support them, man. They're in-house artists that just do radical, great stuff. Catatonic.com. They also have a Twitter, and it's Catatonic, Catatonic. Tell them I sent you. Get a deal on some stickers. And not just stickers. Like I said, they're making cool toys and all kinds of cool stuff. Catatonic.com. I love them. Your one-stop art shop. All right, before I get into the episode, I just want to give a little shout out to Cliff Burton. We lost him 30 years ago on Tuesday, September 27th. He is definitely one of the most iconic bass players of all time. And that era of Metallica, of course, Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, and the masterpiece, Master of Puppets. It's just like Jaws. It never gets fucking old. And maybe over the weekend, throw on some Cliff Burton Metallica and just sit back and enjoy that genius, man. Lost him way too soon. Just fucking freaky. I still remember that day like it was yesterday. You know, just hearing that he died, it was just like a bomb went off in the Bay Area metal scene. You know, I can't even imagine how fucking insane and horrible that must have been. You're just, you and your brothers are out on tour, you're conquering the world, and then you lose one of your guys. That's just fucking wow. He's a genius. Give him some love this weekend. Throw on some Cliff Amahl. Check him on some YouTube. Listen to the music. Celebrate Mr. Cliff Burton. 30 years still enjoying every fucking bass note that guy hit. Love him. Love him. Thank you, Cliff Burton. All right, guys, let's get into the episode right here. Shark! Shark! Candles lit. Dean Carr, how are you, bud?
Hey, Dean, I'm doing great.
It's pitch black out here, and you know what it reminds me of? I've got this flashlight. It reminds me of that scene in Jaws where they go, "Hey, pull up, that's Ben Gardner's boat. I'm gonna go down there." And he's like, "You're gonna what? No, can't we just tow his boat?" And he's like, "No, I gotta go down there now."
Yeah.
And he's got the flashlight and he sees this tooth and the head falls out.
That head with the, it was scary as hell back then. But boy, it sure shows how far they come with prosthetics.
Oh, but it's just a great scene because right now it's pitch black out here.
We can see every star.
How great was today?
Today was, without question, one of the best days I've ever had out here at Guadalupe, if not the best day I've ever had at Guadalupe Island for success. And just sharks that hung out all day and really knew how to play good with the people here.
It was crazy, right?
It was coming at you every way you weren't looking. It was below you, on top of you, beside you. It was nonstop.
There was one point where you and I were in the cage, and there were seven sharks.
Yeah.
And we couldn't even keep up with it. They were just coming at us, man.
They were all just jokers, too.
Yeah, they were.
Everybody was a player, man.
It's so great, man. Now, what is this, your 14th year?
16th year at Guadalupe, and I did 2 years in Australia.
So early on, you did the Australia one because you were trying to shoot for the Deftones video,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
What was that song?
My Own Summer.
And their idea was to have great white sharks. You went out to Australia, you guys didn't see a shark, right?
My idea was
to
shoot the band playing on shark cages on a safe lake. It was called Lake Piru, right outside of Los Angeles, and we had prosthetic sharks swimming around the cages. And then the idea was we cut to underwater, and we have live sharks from Australia. But we went to Australia a week on a shrimp boat for 6 days at the Neptune Islands with Rodney Fox, and we never saw one shark. So we had to come back with our tails between our legs and license all that footage.
No shit, huh?
Yeah.
And then you decide to go back there again?
I went back there again because Rodney was my idol growing up. He was like that sole survivor, that massive great white shark injury he had when he was spearfishing in a championship. And he shot the white shark, and then the white shark drug him through the water till he was snorkeling and he ran out of air. And then the shark said, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm towing a meal behind me." And he turned around and came back to eat Rodney. And
after he shot him?
Yeah, he was just dragging the
spear gun.
It was the line was stuck around his wrist, and he was just dragging him. He couldn't breathe because he just had a snorkel.
Oh, no.
He's very lucky to be alive.
What did it bite on him?
His whole midsection here.
Unbelievable.
It's one of the ugliest shark bites in history.
So it bites him and then leaves?
Took a bite and left him for dead. And I'm not sure how the rope came unhooked from his wrist, but he lost a lot of blood.
How did you hear about this guy? I've never heard of him. I'm a shark freak. Early on, did you read about him or something?
He was, yeah. I wrote about him in my fifth grade white shark report, and he had his own chapter in that, and he still has my fifth grade shark report under his glass. He has a glass display at his Great White Shark Museum in Adelaide, Australia, and he has my shark report there.
Wow. And you got to meet him. That's so fucking cool.
Yeah, he took us out. He took our six-day trip out to sea, and you waited your whole life to meet this guy, and you waited your whole life to see a white shark, and you got to meet the guy, but you didn't get to meet the shark, so it was kind of...
Right. So you go twice and no sharks.
Twice, and I got no sharks, yeah.
And then what gets you into it? Jaws, of course?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, we're the same age, and you get into... So then... Along comes Lawrence, and how do you hear about Lawrence, and what's your first trip out experience like? Because I think I came out on your fourth trip. Maybe. What was your experience early on? It was different, right?
Well, I got tired of going to Australia. Like I said, I went twice, and I didn't take into factor how long the boat ride is to get out here. But once you're on the boat, oh, I just saw a shooting star. It was beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, I found Lawrence, and I was like, hey, what am I doing going to Australia? I can go just down to San Diego and get on the boats. The early boats just went out of San Diego. They didn't go to Ensenada and then out of Ensenada. They just went straight from San Diego, adding 4 more hours to the trip.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, but when you're on the boat and you know this is your destination here in Mexico, and having... If anybody could only come here once, they would see this is like the coolest place to dive for white sharks. It's
absolutely
perfectly clear visibility. South Africa is muddy too.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's murky as hell. Maybe 10, 12 foot visibility at best. And Australia is not great visibility. But I know there's sharks there, but I never saw them. So, hey, I just come here and I watch my watch, and I'm not waiting more than a half an hour before I've got action here every time, and I've been here 16 years.
You remember the first time you get here, you finally see a great white shark. Are you just losing your mind your first time?
Losing my mind my
yeah,
first time.
Because I was too, man. I remember just sitting in the cage with you for 30 minutes, and I was like, there's no fucking sharks out here. We're in the cage 30 minutes. We took a 20-hour boat ride. And then I remember you tapped my shoulder, and I looked over to my right, and it was one of the biggest fucking things I've ever seen in my life, and it just floated by us, and I was like, wow, this is all I need. Yep. Now, this trip, our first 30 minutes in, the shark attacked the cage. It was awesome.
Yeah, he totally bit the cage. But, I mean, within like an hour, one year we had 11 sharks at the same time. It was just madness.
Whoa, really? Because I thought this today was the most ever.
It was great action. The thing about it is every shark hung around and enjoyed, you know, playing for the free food handouts, and it was great. You know, we don't give them every bait that they try to take. We have to keep them hungry and keep them interested and spending time in hours. But, wow, I had so many new guests on the boat this year, and everyone's just going to go home telling stories of the great white shark.
Now, you were thinking this year is your last year. Do you still believe that?
I think we'll be back.
I know, right? So great, man. Because you get out here and you go like, holy shit, man. It's not going to get any better than this. And then it just gets insane.
Yeah. This was, the captain said he thought it was the best year that we've ever had as a group. And meaning the Solmar 5 group, but meaning the group of people that I come out. These were always his favorite group. It's bunch of fun-loving people.
Now, have you ever had a group that didn't work together? Like, you put them together and it's like, oh, these guys hate these guys? Because that's a weird 5 days, right?
There's been a couple of strange personalities, but you know what? We always pull through it, and by the end of it, everyone's embracing everybody because it's too cool to not all get along to to share what we're sharing is like, until you see it, you have no comprehension of like,
not at all,
what a bonding thing this is with great friends.
It's crazy because people are gonna see our photos and our videos, and they're gonna get off on that and stuff. But this was the first time where for 2 days, tomorrow I'm gonna shoot all day, but for 2 days I didn't shoot at all. I just sat in the cage and experienced it because I really was thinking, I'm going to unplug. Like, my fantasy is, like, you know, no Wi-Fi. There's no Instagram. There's no Twitter or anything. Yeah. No cell phone.
You're alone out here.
You're alone out here. And I was thinking, you know what? I'm going to go old school and just be in this fucking cage and trip out, you know? And, man, the sensory overload sometimes of, like, these sharks. There was one this morning, this mom shark. It was so fucking big. It was, like, 14 feet. It was insane. Mm. Now that Mauricio guy saw the, what is it, Deep Blue is the name
Deep
of the biggest
Blue,
shark.
Yeah.
What is it, 18 feet?
20 feet.
20 feet.
20-foot great white that lives at this island.
And he came on the boat and talked, showed you guys slides before. Did you ask, talk to him about how he saw that shark?
That's, he usually spends a little bit of time with us on the boat. Not particularly talking about that shark since he's, it's a recent film he's made of that shark. So he really hasn't been on the boat with me for a couple of years. I actually thought he'd be out here on this trip, and I wanted to ask him all kinds of questions about that shark, but we haven't seen him this trip.
Yeah, bummer, because...
But he's a wealth of knowledge, man.
Now, what does he do? He lives out here for 3 months in that shack?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's an actual shack.
Man,
and it's got to be spooky as fuck, right?
He loves his work.
Man.
Well, yeah.
Is there people with him or just him?
Just him, man.
That's fucking crazy. And so what does he do every day? He just monitors sharks?
Yeah, he just checks the tags and tries to see what sharks are moving to what part of the islands to feed and growth changes. And, you know, if perhaps a shark was deceased or something, it...
Where does he live when he's not in over there?
You have to ask Mauricio.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, you know, like what he does the rest of his time of his life. Because, man, that is just a radical gig to live alone out here, man. I just can't imagine. It's almost like a fucking, like a scary nightmare.
Well, all I can hear is the California sea lions howling in the background right now. Like,
yeah,
it sounds like a frat party or something. But they're all rolled up on the beach right in front of his shack.
So I know.
He listens to that like as loud as like a neighbor in a single studio apartment in Hollywood.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
hey, you fuckers, shut up.
Yeah, it's just like that.
I can hear him over there. Now, how does Mauricio get back? Do you know? Does he get on one of these boats?
He occasionally jumps in on with us and goes back to the mainland and takes care of business and stuff. But I mean, he's dedicated his whole life to looking after these sharks, and
yeah,
we love him for that.
That's cool. Now you got a brand new Nikon. You also shoot Nikon. How you liking this brand new one? What is it, and tell people what it is?
I just picked up this new Nikon D810, which is just under 32 megapixels, which is three times what my Nikon D700 was at. Oh, I guess it's twice as much. I had a 16 megapixel D700, so it's twice the sensor and resolution of my last one. And boy, can I tell with what I shot today.
Well, you shot a fucking seagull flying, and it was probably one of the most, like, the depth of this photo is so incredible. You look at it and just go, I can't even fucking believe that photo, man. It just... The quality of that camera was blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's so fast, and it's a lot lighter, I believe, than my D700. I would like to take it underwater. I don't have a housing for it this year, but I might borrow my guest Ewan's housing and try it out tomorrow. Because when I'm getting those animated attack sequences.
Yeah.
I wish the D700 shot faster, but it just doesn't shoot fast enough to...
When they're coming up to bite the bait?
Yeah, I'm like, click, 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 click.
His is like...
Click, 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 yeah.
Yeah, I could hear it.
Rapid fire. So, I killed it today.
Yeah.
I got some of my best white shark stuff in my life today.
Is that right?
Oh, I can't wait to show you.
Wow. Now, people can buy your photos, right, Dean?
Absolutely.
And what's the website?
Well, I don't really have the shark stuff for sale on.
But let's talk a little bit about it, because you were on a few years ago, and now the podcast has absolutely exploded. You did. Let's name some videos you did. You did Marilyn Manson. You did the Dave Matthews one with the head, right?
What do you want to talk about? New videos or old videos?
Let's talk about all kinds of videos you're doing, because. Your stuff always is so next level and so original looking. Let's talk about the classics you did and the new stuff you're doing.
Well, thank you, Dean. I mean, the stuff that catapulted my career, and as for people like Manson and Dave Matthews, yeah, we did Sweet Dreams, the Manson remake, and we did Dave Matthews Crash Into Me, Dave Matthews Don't Drink the Water, Cypress Hill, maybe four videos for them.
Oh, you did that. So you wanna be a rock superstar. I love that one. Yeah. Yeah, change it up. Someone gonna come around and steal your thing. Do your thing.
Yeah,
I love that.
I love those guys. We had a lot of fun. We've done four videos for those guys. And
you did the Slayer Rain and Blood concert where you poured blood on the band, right?
Did that. Did Iron Maiden, Rock in Rio, the movie. We did 18 cameras in Rio de Janeiro. And, I mean, God, you know, it's 35 years of this stuff. But come recently, I got back together with Working with Korn.
Yep.
And we just did a wicked, wicked video called Rotting in Vain with my good friend Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy and Gladiator and so much more. He was great in Sin City, too. He was like the crazy guy with the hand grenades.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Love that movie.
My crazy Scottish friend Tommy. We're both a little more reserved with our personal lives these days, but it was great to work together again, and he's kind of this mad scientist guy in this video. But it's, man, when I left the mainland, it was almost up around 7 million views.
Whoa.
Like, boom, like in a month and a half. And
it's funny because people think videos are dead, but they're not if you have a good one, right?
It's a great video. Man, it's great. The band's back. It sounds like the first record again, and the fans are ready for them to get back. They, you know, they tried a lot of different things, and some things worked and some didn't work so well, and they're back where they started, and the fans couldn't be happier.
What else you working on?
I just finished up a bunch of stuff with Slipknot, some new stuff with Manson, Ministry, and I annually do either the Halloween commercials for Busch Gardens, Hallow Scream, or I usually do Universal Halloween Horror Nights, and this year we did the new Busch Garden commercials. It's called Evil Encore. It's a deranged man who makes puppets in his gallery, and we had a very wicked puppet made and hired Wee Man from Jackass. His wife Allie's. They were interested in using actual puppets and puppeteering them before, but I did that for their competition, which is Universal Studios, a few years before with Chucky.
Shh, interview.
Chucky and Jigsaw from, what was that Jigsaw guy?
Jigsaw?
Jigsaw and the little tricycle.
What was that on?
That was, oh my God, come on.
Creepshow?
Nope. Anyhow, but the new one is for Busch Gardens, and it just came out last week. It's really screwed up, and just the lighting and the art direction are beautiful. So check it out, Busch Gardens Hallow Scream. It's called Evil Encore. It's the new theme of their whole haunted house at the various Busch Gardens.
Those are dope, yeah. Right? Those haunted houses, like at Universal Studios. If Rob Zombie would do them and shit. That's crazy.
I think he had one down. He was doing one for a couple of years in Orange County. I'm not sure if it's happening this year.
What is there anybody you haven't worked with yet that you would like to work with?
Man, it's such a strange time for music. I mean,
it is, right? Who are you listening to right now?
Right now, man, I've been playing Pandora. I like my spins I get off playing Montrose and all the things that turns into. And I love putting on my I Hate God channel with all the heading into High on Fire and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
shit's great. Pandora does it for me because it turns me on to new music that I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
And I like that versus the Spotify one. It's all the same band. It's like I like to get things that sound like this but aren't this. And it's really opened up my head to a lot of cool new music.
Oh, let's talk about you did an AC/DC video.
No, I didn't. I did an AC/DC album cover.
Oh, that's right. The cover. And you made the statue. And you got it at your house, right?
Angus lives in my dining room.
You
yeah.
fucking guy. That's rock. What's it called?
Stiff Upper Lip.
Stiff Upper Lip. And that had like the Saving New York City and all that.
That was, and Joe Verese produced that.
So you, how did that come about, doing that?
I work with the head of the art department many, many years. We've done so many bands over the years, and she needed someone that was more a conceptualist because the band couldn't come in from Australia, and she needed someone that could figure out how to satisfy an album cover for AC/DC without having AC/DC because they're always on the cover.
Right.
Angus is on the cover.
Right.
So I was like, well, let's see. She gave me 2 days alone to think about it. He can't be there. What can we do? Let's make a statue of him. Let's make an ice sculpture of him. I was thinking some high society party and doing like a clear ice sculpture of him. But I was thinking of some like upper crust, like old like English lady, like leaning into the statue with her like glasses on the stick lifted up, and he was pissing right in her face. That was one idea.
I love it. I love it.
They didn't go for that, but we know Angus is always on the cover, so we made a bronze and a patina stat, very 100% light likeness of Angus, and we shot it all over the city, and that's what we did.
How did you make the bronze? Did somebody make it for you?
Yes, my creature maker, Screaming Mad George, whom I worked with forever. He's back in Japan now. I miss him dearly. He made it. He just does great work, and it's hard to really find great work of that caliber anymore in this town. There's a lot of people that do prosthetics.
Because of the money, too, right? Because people just want to go $5.
It's the artistry also. But I mean, he made it. They weighed about 75 pounds each. There was a bronze and a patina. I remember the record label said, make sure both of those end up back at the New York label on Monday. And I was like, say what? I just conceived this thing. I oversaw the construction of it. I shot it. I guess I'll be sending you one of those.
Yeah.
I almost didn't want to send them any of them, but they got one back.
Yeah.
And that's all they're getting.
And then did Angus write you or anything and say, great job?
No, they're really obscure, and their management group, from what I know, is a lawyer or a group of lawyers. They're not a real management group. They're hard to get a hold of. You know, they come to town. I've never even seen them live. It's like I wanted to go to the show. I wouldn't even have a clue who to contact to get backstage.
That's fucking crazy, right? You did the cover and you don't even see them live?
Never seen them in my life.
Unbelievable. What's the best show you ever saw live?
Probably Priest in 79.
Ooh, in 79?
Off that Unleashing the East tour.
Oh, my God. Where was that at?
Seattle Center Arena.
Wow. And were they headliner or?
They were, yeah.
How about that fucking record, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's my Desert Island record right there.
Is it?
Yeah.
The version of Sinner and the version of Green Man Alishi. But Sinner on that record could be the most molten track ever done, man.
Oh, come on, KK.
I mean, when it gets into the middle, nothing is now waiting so far, far away.
Yeah,
you know?
Crushing.
Oh, and KK downing with the vibrato on that one, the tremolo. On the flying V. Oh, I got to tell you, man, Screaming for Vengeance has been back on my heavy rotation. And And I think Screaming for Vengeance, I was talking about two of the best shows ever that MTV captured, one being GNR Live at the Ritz right when they came out, and the other one, Screaming for Vengeance in Houston. You can see it on YouTube. Man, fucking, what a band. Screaming for Vengeance, yeah. Back.
You're talking the one they put the DVD out on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it was a VHS back then.
Memphis.
Is it Memphis or is it Houston?
It's Memphis.
It is. Okay, yeah. Wow, right?
So fucking good.
Screaming for Vengeance. Just opening with the Hellion into Electric Eye.
It was great.
Okay, wow. I loved how fast you could name that concert. Boom. Did you ever see Zeppelin?
Man, that at that age, we were...
I know.
We were sneaking out and going to concerts, and for some reason, I must have had a test that day or something. It's like I couldn't skip school and fake my mom out that I was babysitting or something.
Yeah, I think that's where Duff McKagan saw him at the Seattle, what's it called, the Superdome?
Kingdome.
Kingdome, yeah. He talks
I have a DVD of that show.
Yeah, me too.
It's pretty cool. You know, you have opportunities after that, but that was called Opportunity Missed.
Yeah, I know, right? Me too. Me too.
Before they started wearing all the puffy clothes and the...
In through the outdoor look?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the pirate shirts and stuff? Arr. I love you, dude. You know, I think I've known you like 20 years now.
Yeah, buddy.
And I just love when we're around... we've had some epic years, times together,
sure,
and this trip right here is pretty monumental.
Just look up at the sky, man.
I know, right?
It's like,
I mean, there's probably a billion stars out here that you don't see in LA because it's just too lit up. It's insane. The Milky Way right here.
Look at that. It's 2%.
Hey, what about that shark? That seal murder today? Shark got a seal today.
I didn't see it, but I did see two sharks down in the deep cage. Took dumps, and it's pretty funny.
Took dumps on you? No
just
shit.
Below me. No, they start convulsing in it's like chocolate milk coming out.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, pretty gross.
Wow. Now, let me ask you this. So the man shark, it has two dicks.
Claspers, yeah.
Why do they have two dicks?
I don't know. Why not?
No, but I mean, I think it's because when they're fucking, in case one slips out the other, right? That's what Lawrence was saying, I think.
Maybe that's so, yeah. But they're violent when they do that. We've never...
No one's ever got the footage.
Well, we've just seen the aftermath of what happens to the female's neck.
Because
the male just holds on.
So the male comes up.
He's not
going
to hold on with his little, fins. Yeah. Get over here.
So he comes up and he bites into the shark, but doesn't kill it. Now, when the male sharks have bites on them, it's because they're fighting to fuck, right?
Yeah, or I don't know, the transgender thing today.
You're out of your mind, dude. Well, thank you, dude. Oh, tell them where they can buy some of your photos and see them and everything.
Ah, well, go to DeanKarr, KARR.com. You can definitely find me there. My email's there, and you can contact me there. Lots of stuff. If you like any of the artwork from my past... projects, that's all exclusively available through me there too. If you need to get a hold of me, I'm not hard to find. I'm on Facebook also.
And if the people want to go on the trip, they can hit you on Facebook, right?
Yeah, or via my website. The email's right there. Yeah,
and
it's a beautiful trip, man. We are a family. Everybody comes. We have 20 people right now, and 16 of these people are my people, and 4 of them are guests of the boat. But our family comes back every year. It's a core of 12 to 14 people.
And it's every year in September, October?
Every year. I like to come in September, yes.
Yeah. And you come at this time because it's, what do you think, the most sharks, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of sharks here. It's very sharky, Dean.
Sharky shark. All right, thank you, buddy.
You got it, buddy.
I love you, man.
Bye-bye.
My name's Ewan Ranikin.
And you, first of all, you're a photographer for the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, that's correct. I shoot for the Sharks. I also shoot big wave surfing up in Northern California, Mavericks. And I'm a corporate photographer for Clorox. I shoot their NASCARs and tabletop stuff, all that kind of good stuff.
How'd you get into photography?
It's kind of like it's a weird story. I went to art school in San Francisco, and I actually went for fine art. And while I was painting stuff there, I was kind of worried about copyright infringement with like photos that I was choosing to paint. And so I decided I should probably learn how to take some photos. And so picked up a camera and it kind of went on from there. I still paint a lot as well, but it just photography kind of snowballed. I started shooting weddings and one thing led to another. And
how many years ago?
About 12 years now.
Did you ever shoot on film at first?
Back in the day, my dad was quite an avid photographer.
Oh yeah, was he like a
not
famous
professional? No, yeah. He's really good, but he got the ball rolling. We always had cameras around. My mom's an artist, so I've always had kind of the creative side going for me. So school was either art or sports. I could always draw, and then you know, photos just kind of imagery in itself. I'm very kind of image driven. Like I get a lot of stimulation and stuff like that. So making my own stuff. This is the kind of stuff that drives me though. Like this, I paid to do this myself, but just the experiences itself. You know, putting yourself out there, and you don't get these photos unless you're actually here. So
yeah. Let's before we get into what we're seeing here, which is fucking. Could be one of the most mind-boggling things I've seen. I've been here a few times, and this trip has been insane. Uh-huh. But let's talk a little bit about how you get from wedding photographer to shooting for the Sharks, which, by the way, last year they were
pretty
in the,
epic. Stanley yeah, Cup. Yeah, yeah, good stuff. I don't know. I'm kind of I've been lucky because I was a corporate photographer for a long time with Clorox. So I didn't really, I've never really been worried about kind
of. What were you doing? Just shooting their products?
Yeah, like, table, anything.
I mean, they got one product, right? Clorox?
That's what you think. They own a bunch of stuff. They own Hidden Valley Ranch, KC Masterpiece, Kingsford Charcoal.
So you're shooting all that shit.
Everything, the whole line. Any photo you ever see gets shot in our office downtown Oakland. Beautiful studio there. But, I started doing that, and then it was kind of like I wasn't really worried. Like all the other stuff, I was just shooting for myself.
Sharks or sports or rock concerts? You do any rock concerts?
I've shot some. I shot. I've got a good buddy in L.A., Christian Han, who's like thrown me a bone once. He's a music producer. Hopefully now with Dean, I'll get to do some more of that too.
But yeah.
Literally everything I've shot, it's just a story of just, you know, going out and picking your camera up, man, taking photos, and then hopefully, you know, getting it out there. That's a big thing, you know, nowadays, obviously, social media. Pushing your social media as hard as you can, getting it in front of people.
Instagram.
Kind of being annoying about it, but like getting it out there at least, and like squeaky wheel gets oiled kind of stuff. It got caught people's eye, you know, people liked it and got their attention, and then they come kind of asking for it. You know, as long as your photos, I let you, you know, you let your work speak for itself kind of
thing.
Totally. So,
are you the only Sharks photographer?
No, there's quite a few that shoot the game. I can shoot the game too, but they actually bring me in to do a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff in the locker room when the players get there, and I like that
naked
stuff more.
Shots, stuff like that.
Totally. If I'm lucky. They kind of just because I'm my style is shooting weddings for so long. It's kind of very like photojournalistic.
Right.
It's kind of like telling a story, all that kind of good stuff. So my images tend to. They're more that way. They're not so much Sports Illustrated. Well, they can be used for that, but it's more they use them for social media and stuff, game day and all that. Especially during Stanley Cup was insane, man. Like they just like I walked in and they're just like, here's your pass, and my pass was literally like, go anywhere you want.
Fuck.
And it like all the other photographers had to like stay in there's zones. Yeah, you know, hockey's a hard, really hard sport to shoot because there's only like three holes in the ice.
Yeah.
At SAP at least. And so, like, you can shoot from the rafters down, but, like, shooting through, and it's such a fast sport, and, you know, yada, yada.
It's insane.
So they have that covered. There's really way, way talented guys that have been doing that for years and years and years, but, like, the stuff off the ice is what I thrive on, trying to get, like, crowd and, you know, atmosphere, all that kind of good stuff.
So, obviously, we're doing some underwater shooting here and stuff, but how do you start shooting the Mavericks now? If people don't know, the Mavericks are the biggest waves in the world, actual waves. There's bigger ones if you go out in the middle of San Diego and jet ski into a fucking wave or whatever. Those, I've seen those.
Yeah.
But these are, if you've ever seen the documentary Riding Giants, it's some of the most dangerous and most insane waves. And growing up, I always fantasized of being a surfer, and it's just way too radical. And I can't even imagine riding. I think they had a 100-footer there a few years ago, right?
I don't know if it's gotten really big. I don't know if we've got to 100 yet. I know Portugal is the other place that they're massive right now. But yeah, Mavericks, and it's like a, you know, a 5-story building falling on its face every if it's a good year. I mean, the sets are really close together, so it's like I was telling you before. It's like it's the noise. So I don't go on the skis. I sit on the boats, and for years I used to pay to go out. When the competition would get called, you know, it's one of those things where there's
a pager, or now it's like a cell phone now, but back in the day it was like a pager. The guy that found him died in him, right?
No, he's still out there. He actually owns the rights to it or whatnot. But he'll go around on it. He doesn't surf anymore. Well, he might actually, I don't know, but he's out there.
What's his name?
You've got me.
Yeah, that guy.
That kid.
But
anyway,
for years it was a secret spot.
Yeah, for years and years and years, and then the word got out. It's
got to be incredible. The first guy that finds the Mavericks, kind of like where we're at right now. This is incredible because it's great white shark. Fucking, I mean, it almost looks like a farm.
Yep.
There's so many sharks here. But can you imagine the first time? You're a surfer and you pull off the side of the road maybe to piss on your way to Santa Cruz, and you look down and you go, like, oh my God. What the fuck is going on down there?
The cool thing about Mavericks too is it only breaks in one spot. So other giant waves, the guys have to get towed in and all that. They're massive.
Yeah.
And there's no way you can paddle into them. That's the most amazing part about Mavericks is these guys sit in the pocket, and then they just a couple kicks, and because the reef juts up so quickly right there, this wave, which you can see the rollers coming in, like you can see the sets, everything has to align perfectly, but when it gets to that certain point, the thing just doubles in size, and these chaps are just right there, a couple kicks, and dude, they're
that's
off.
Fucking
they're
crazy. Now you've had to see some pretty gnarly crashes, absolutely. Right?
Yeah, I mean the fact. So I was shooting it, like I was saying. So I used to pay. To get out on boats and sit, because they do these like this procession of boats if you go out there, and it goes like spins around on the shoulder of the wave itself. It just the boats go in this giant circle. So sometimes you're in the front, sometimes you're in the back, sometimes you're in the front. And like you were saying, how do you kind of come up in photography? I used to just pay to get on those boats. It was expensive, you know. Get your seat.
How much?
I think it was like $500.
Wow. To get on the boat so you can...
Just to go and take photos for yourself. Kind
wow.
Of thing. But I remember going as a kid and sitting on the bluff when you can't anymore, but sitting on the bluff and seeing all these big, you know, huge lenses around me and all that and being like, someday I'm going to be doing that. I remember literally saying that. And then, you know, paid my money, went out there, shot. And then last year, my photos... How the boats go, you kind of get forced in these awkward positions to take the photos from.
Yeah.
And the guy who won the competition, Nick Lamb, his set came up, his wave came up, and I just happened to be in the right place, right time. And I shot him breaking, coming down on the wave, and it was epic because you could see the cliffs in the background and people's houses, and it gave you really good scale on how big these huge waves are. And Nick's just, you know, coming down the front of it. And they had their – I actually wasn't working for them at the time. So they had their photographers right in front, and their angle was just more up into the wave, so it didn't give the perspective. And like I got home that night, I edited like crazy, and I sent the stuff out. And Nick, the guy who saw it, he used my photo to like tweet out instead of the one that they had, and blah blah blah. So everyone got really psyched on that. And then, I mean, there was some back and forth with us, but then they ended up just like, we would love you to shoot for us next year. So
well, that's killer. That's so they pay you to shoot for it now.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Now, at an early age, of course, I see the movie Jaws. I'm 50, so I saw it in the theater when it first came out.
Yeah.
And immediately I was like, there was a few things in life I knew I wanted to do. One was skydive. One was diving with sharks. But of course, for probably about 30 years, that wasn't really an option to dive with great white sharks. Because I wasn't like a marine biologist. Right. And also, there wasn't just a spot people knew, like, hey, there's sharks here all the time. It was just random sightings. And then, of course, Lawrence, who found these or heard about these sharks, came out here, which is, by the way, an 18-hour boat ride. So we get on in Ensenada. This thing is not a boat. It's a fucking massive yacht. Yep. Sleeps like 40. Yep. We have incredible chefs on here making some food that's mind-boggling. And the crew is next level.
Yep.
But when you see this this ship, you think, oh, we're going to be out there in a couple hours.
Right.
It's crazy, but literally 18 hours, like you get on, you talk for a little bit, then you go to bed and you wake up and you're still not there.
Nope.
And you finally show up and it's so fucking far away. There's zero Wi-Fi, there's zero cell phone, and there's zero fucking people. Anything goes wrong out here, you're absolutely dead. There's no like, call the ambulance, you're done. So, and in the island, we're sitting on the back or the front of the ship right now. We're looking at the island. It's where they filmed King Kong in 1932 or 38, I believe. I don't know what year it was, right around in there. And I can't even imagine coming out here in the 30s with fucking just, you know, garbage equipment and stuff, you know, like, all right, here's where we're going to shoot King Kong, you know?
And there's not like there's beaches you can just walk the stuff up.
Nothing. There's nothing out here.
Cliffs.
Now, my point is, what made you get into sharks? Were you into them at a young age? Of course, being around surfing, sharks are the scariest thing ever for surfers.
Yeah, I mean, but, I mean, yes and no. I know that a lot of surfers... I mean, you just have a healthy respect, right?
Yeah.
And so I've always like, honestly, like, I'm like, that's terrifying, you know?
Yeah.
But I've always been like, I had this weird thing where I wanted to bang into the cage. Like, I want to be close to it. I want to feel something. Cause you don't really, you know, you go to a zoo or something, you see a tiger, you see something, some like raw predator and you're like, wow, I want to like,
yeah,
this pretty epic. You don't get to see something like that, you know, animal wise anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
To me, it's not an adrenaline thing, and it's not a, yeah, I'm fucking macho.
No.
To me, it was more of what was instilled in my mind at that small, young age of, there's a fucking massive, massive fucking shark out there in the water,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you gotta tell the people how big these sharks are, too, because, like, so we see white sharks up in Northern California a lot. But they're only like, you know, maybe
6 foot.
Maybe 8 feet. Yeah, 6 foot usually. You know, young. These things, and then they told me they were going to be big. Like, we saw a shark today, I think it was like 13, 14 feet long.
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely.
Around, man, I don't even know how big around. Like, they huge.
And it's funny because I tell a lot of people, when I was telling you this, when I saw Jaws at a young age, it was so real to me and everything. And then as you got older, you're like, oh, it's kind of fake. But then when you get here, you go, no, Jaws is like exactly real. Because the shark doesn't fucking swim and paddle and everything. It glides by you with the gracefulness of a fucking glider.
Right.
But it's the size of a bus.
Right.
And they just float right, I mean, a foot away from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
A foot away from you.
Yeah.
So... anyway, I interrupted you. How did you get into it? Did you?
That's all right. I had been just always really, really interested in like big predators like that. And like sharks always just kind of, I mean, there's Shark Week and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I used to just lap that stuff up. And then finally, like 7 years ago, I saw, and I wish I knew the chap's name. He posted these like incredible black and white photos of these great whites. Just like high contrast, just like edgy stuff. And I was like, you know, you see a lot of, you know, obviously there's a lot of great white imagery, but like just really like different stuff, you know? And, I emailed the guy and he like very nicely got back to me and he just said, you know, this is the boat you need to go on. You need to find Dean Carr. You need to get with him. This guy will show you. He'll bring you the biggest sharks in the world, yada, yada. So it started this kind of 7 year obsession. It's not cheap, but it's like it was.
It's worth every penny.
Absolutely
worth every penny.
Like, you know, and honestly, beforehand, I already knew it was going to be, but it's like, it's, you know, I bought a house and had two kids in the meantime, in these 7 years. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of other stuff pulling me every other which way. But I have a buddy of mine who I brought along with me, who I'm just like, man, when the hell are you going to get this chance again?
Yep.
I mean, you could go next year.
Yeah, yeah, but still,
but, you know,
you
it's
keep
one of those
saying
things,
next year, and then you never go.
That's what everyone says.
And also, I always tell people, look, when I first came out here, they started coming out here, I believe, in 2000. I came out the first time in 2004. And it was gangster. There was no regulations.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no one around here.
Thank God they have regulations.
You're just chumming. There's massive sharks coming out.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You're fucking like, hey, see if you can ride one. You know, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Now there's like regulations.
Kind of.
And I, yeah, kind of, yeah, totally. I mean, there's no regulations that are
we're not hurting sharks.
And they're not obstructing you from anything. But what I'm saying is, it could be one day where they just say, you can't come out here anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
I wouldn't doubt it either. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I would hate for that. If I had put it off forever, then they went, yeah, you don't get to do that anymore. No. So you should have went when you did,
yeah,
you know?
Well, it's like it's like one of those things, woulda, coulda, shoulda. What I've learned about this island, too, is that there's two places in the world where the biggest pregnant females show up. It's Seal Island, South Africa.
Right.
And then it's Guadalupe is where we are right now. And
Deep Blue is the name of the shark.
Yeah, so that giant shark that everyone's seen on Facebook or wherever, that was...
Yeah, what was that, 18 feet?
I think so, and like his school bus around or something like that. Like just
It's shark.
Looks like Bruce from Finding Nemo.
It's incredible, too, because the shark on Jaws was 25 feet, I believe, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really fucking crazy. Uh-huh. But what you don't understand is, like, if we say an 8-foot shark... When you're in a cage and you see an 8-foot shark, for the first day we're seeing 8-foot sharks, that's fucking big.
Yeah.
And in the water, it looks so big. And also, as you dropped in the cage the first time, you were like, I had been here before. So you're like shitting your pants, like, oh my God, there's a shark. I'm breathing underwater.
Yeah,
I'm floating around. I've got a camera.
Just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. But. When a 14-footer comes up, like, which was this morning, we were up at 6 a.m., got in the cages, and a 14-foot mom shark came up, you can tell right away, holy shit, the difference. Now, imagine seeing an 18-footer. Uh-huh. So there's a guy, there's one guy, I guess, that lives out here.
Yep.
One guy, I guess his name's Mauricio. He lives here for about 3 months. In this shack on the beach, there's like a shack.
Yep.
There's no other fucking people here. Matter of fact, the island was overtaken by goats. There's a million goats here, and from what I heard, they ate everything on it. And sometimes the Coast Guard comes in and does a little
extermination,
little redecoration, I guess, which is pretty crazy. But can you imagine being Mauricio and you're out on this boat? And all of a sudden, this 18-footer shows up, and you're like, well, this is whole nother fucking game.
No, and that was a cool thing they told us when we first got on, too. When you look down at the cage, so there's two cages they put down on the back, right? And the width of the cage is 8 feet. So, like, one of these monsters goes past you, you can tell exactly how big they are. And so, like, I can't imagine a shark that spans both of those and the back of the boat. Like, we had ones today that went a full one and then maybe some.
Yeah, because each cage is 8 foot.
Yeah.
So it's 8 foot, then there's a 3 foot gap, then another cage, 8 foot. And so you can immediately, when you're in the top, you can go, 11 footer.
Right.
You know, which is cool that they tell us stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff that they taught us on the ride out that last time I didn't hear at all.
Cool.
You know?
I was going to say one more thing, too. When I first got in the cage, I was expecting, I was expecting what anyone would, every molecule. Molecule of your body wants to get out of that water, right? Like, you're looking down, and you see these giant sharks, and you're like, I'm gonna get in there. I'm like, okay, let's do this. So I get in, and I fluster around for a minute because I've snorkeled a bunch, I've never scuba dived or anything. So learning how to breathe, learning how, like, weight vest, you're falling all of a sudden, like, and I got my camera and all the rest, and I'm just excited, right? All the adrenaline. So there's gonna be like a fear element involved, right?
Yeah,
but there was like zero. Like, I looked around, and there are these giant animals floating around you who you've been told your whole life are these, you've seen Jaws, killers, but they were so chill. They were so chill that it was just like...
We're putting a lot of trust into the cage bars,
obviously,
though, for sure.
Obviously.
Because...
I'm not getting out of the cage. I'm not about to say that, but...
And at one point, I went in the cage first on a couple days ago, because if you've been a few times, they let you go first.
Right.
And every time it's the same thing. I told you for me. I get in the cage. I'm in there about 30 minutes. I'm like, man, this is bullshit. No fucking sharks. And then the drama is building. You're like, you're just doing 360s in the cage, looking around. No fucking sharks. And then here came this one floating. And right away, he attacks the cage.
Yeah.
Like our first shark right into the fucking thing. And I'm going to Instagram that video so you guys can watch it. And I was like, oh, we're awake now. I think my only fear and I don't know if I'll ever get over it, is,
oh, I know you're gonna say.
And the cage is bolted down and roped down and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're drifting in your mind, and sometimes we're in the cage for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. You can be in the cage as long as you want here. But after a couple hours, you're not really thinking. And once in a while, I get a good dose of panic attack thinking, what if the cage broke
just
loose?
Just let loose.
It broke loose. You were 100% dead.
Well, I mean, but like you said, you could kind of maybe spring through, but you're weighted down. So you're like
Weighted down.
Yeah, no, you're
and then your air only goes so far. So you'd have to hold on to the air fucking hose and then hope you can get out before a shark got you.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the only fear.
We have one more day of diving. Let's not
talk about that. We're on the back of the boat right now, and I wish you guys could see.
You see that?
There's probably about 1 million stars. The Milky Way is above us.
Yeah.
There's about 100 sharks below us. Now, today, today was one of the most epic days I've ever seen in my life. At one point, and I've come out here, and Dean Carr's come out like 12 trips or whatever, and we're going to have him on in a minute. But I've come out and saw like a couple sharks. And then come out, eat lunch, go back in, a couple more sharks. And that's fucking fantastic.
Right.
Like, a couple sharks is fantastic when you've never seen any in your life.
Right.
But today was a goddamn fucking, concert of sharks.
Like yesterday, obviously, was my first day in the water with them. And I was like, man, that was epic, because there was quite a few sharks then. I'm like, must not get better than that. I didn't really say that to anyone, because I'm like, well, that was a lot of sharks. And then today was just, I don't know how I'm going to explain this to anyone.
There was seven sharks at one time when Dean and I were in the cage. Yeah. There was so many sharks that I was kind of losing my mind, like, I can't even fucking get my head around this.
Dude, and you're like an epic shark spotter. I had you in there with me one time, and you're just like pointing them. I'm like, holy shit. And I'm spinning around. And that's another thing. You get your hoses tangled, and you're like getting stuck at the top of the cage. But
yeah, because what I like to do is I like to get on the floor of the cage.
Yeah.
And then just fucking look around, you know, and spin around and look and look down, look left, right, and behind me, and then point to the guys that are shooting so they get the best fucking photos, you know?
Totally.
And that's always my favorite thing to do. And also, it really, when you're not shooting photos, it really lets you take it in, man. It's so insane. Yeah.
Now,
let's talk a little bit about your shooting on Nikon.
Yeah. So I'm a Nikon guy.
Yeah. Why are you a Nikon guy? I'm just curious. Did you start out Nikon?
No. It's been a you start with Nikon or Canon in the beginning, and kind of build your lenses.
No Sony, like 5Ds or anything.
Sony, like the new Sony sensors are pretty incredible, but it's I eventually maybe we, I mean they're mirrorless.
Oh, Canon's
now,
the 5D, right?
Yeah, Canon.
Okay, then
Canon's
Sony. My buddy just got a new
A7s
Sony.
Yeah. Sony's coming into their own now, but you start building your lens collection. That's kind of what drives whatever camera you have. Nothing against Canon; they're great cameras as well, you know. But I've always been a Nikon guy, and I've got an Aquatech housing, which is awesome. So it allows me to
take. How much was that? Like $3,000?
Yeah, they're expensive. The body itself is about $1,800, but then you have to buy each lens you put in it. You have to buy a different kind of tube
for the underwater housing.
Yep.
Now, did you buy it only for this trip?
I did.
So this is a $10,000 trip for
you. Man, I'm telling you, it's been a 7-year obsession. So it's just like, I was saying, it's expensive. So it was hard to justify, but. You know, if you're going to do this, you got to do it right. I mean, I was like, maybe I'll just do this once. Now doing it, there's probably a good chance I'm going to be doing it again. I know my wife's going to absolutely love this, so hopefully we'll be able to come back and do it again.
It's pretty insane, right?
It's an experience that I think even people who are scared of sharks should check out.
Yeah.
I had the drone today up over the boat.
Oh my God, your drone footage is next level. First of all, tell them what drone you're using, because when I came in 04, 05, there's no fucking drones, you know what I mean?
Right.
Now, you're flying this drone over this island that looks basically like Jurassic Park.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. And it's an old volcanic island. And this drone is flying up in the fucking... At one point, he flew him right over the seals.
Yeah.
And the seals were looking up at it like, get out of here, you fucker.
Yeah,
it's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
And then you flew the drone from the island over the seals, out to the boat, 360 around the boat, and then fucking, it was epic footage. And what drone is that?
So it's a DJI Phantom 3 Pro. They now have a DJI 4, so it's like just a step down under the Inspire. The Inspire is one where the camera can spin all the way around. It's an incredible bit of kit. Like it, like the flight controls and all that, super easy to learn. You can fart around.
Could you lose it out there? Like if you lost signal?
I mean, but kind of like that's, you know, people go like, oh, are you afraid putting your camera under the water? Well, no, because if you don't do it, you won't get the shot.
Yeah.
Are you afraid of flying your drone over there? Well, I mean, obviously it would suck to lose $1,000, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I got a really sweet bit of footage, so it's
my god, it's beyond.
And I got a bunch of it, like I put it up twice today. So and
at one point you flew right over the cages and a shark jumped out, man.
I'll give it to you so you can put it on
your Instagram. I can't wait.
So but I was like I was saying, when I had it above the boat, there's a polarizer on the lens of that thing, so it cuts through the glare on top of the water.
Yeah.
And you're looking down and there's five sharks just milling around the boat.
Great whites.
Yeah.
Yeah, no bullshit sharks. There's no fucking, you know, jive sharks around here.
Negative. Just giant man eaters. Of course not.
So you prefer Nikon? You started out on Nikon?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the button layout. Like, that's what I know. If you hand me a Canon, I can use it, but it's, you know, and like people love to get, I mean, it's like anything. They're like, they got their favorite and they're like, oh, fuck the other guys. But like, it's not like that for me. I prefer Nikon just because that's what I have, like thousands of dollars built up in lenses on them. And
when I was young, Nikon was the bomb in the 70s for film.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, they started out, you know, well, they didn't start out, but they also used to build telescope, microscopes and all the rest. And, you know, they still make rifle scopes. So like their glass is amazing.
Right.
Not
like
the
Carl Zeiss, that old stuff like that. Yeah.
So they know what they're doing. And hopefully, I mean, Canon was kicking their ass for a long time, but I think I'm shooting, so I have the 810 that's in the housing. It's 36 megapixel, which is great for this kind of stuff. You shoot wide and crop in. And then up top, I'm shooting with their new D5, which is awesome, 12 frames a second, yada, yada. So for getting those sharks coming out of the water.
Let me ask you. So when you jumped in yesterday, you shot a lot of stuff, and you weren't too happy about it. What adjustments did you make today?
Yeah, so...
I sound like a Wide World Sports. You were first out there in the cage, and you weren't too happy. What adjustments did you make?
No, we played good. I think we
did
all
right.
Gave 110%. I mean, I was just being hard on myself. I think I was stoked on the drone stuff, and then I was shooting... I was trying a zoom lens, so it was, I could go from 24 millimeters, which is pretty wide, all the way to 70. And I was trying to get some really, you know, nice tight stuff on the faces. But by the time I would be tight on the face, you know, the next, because we had so many sharks, it's really a stupid thing to bitch about. But I just wasn't stoked on my image.
Right.
So I knew the next day I had another day. So today, this morning, most of the day I shot really wide, 15 millimeters. So it's very wide. And that's the great thing about that camera, is 36 megapixels, so I can crop in
36 megapixels.
Yeah, man, it's massive.
Are you shooting raw?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 314 gigs in 2 days. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Now, once you get the, I had a photographer on here. I think it was Baron Woolman, and he said, shooting digital now is like everybody has the same editing tool. So once you get it in, everybody's photos kind of look the same. What do you think makes photos stand out different?
That's kind of the thing with digital now. It's not about, because you can almost take a photo that's completely under or overexposed, and if, as long as you shoot it in RAW, you can fix it to be an even exposure. So it's not really so much about, a lot of photographers are going to get mad at me for saying this, but the way I used to shoot was just, I didn't know what I was doing with the camera.
Yeah, just auto?
And I would just fix it. Oh,
I gotcha.
But I would get it, if it was way underexposed or overexposed, I would just be like, oh, well, I'll just fix it later on. That makes for a ton of post-processing, which it sucks the life out of you.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be out there shooting, not sitting in front of your computer. So the more you learn how to use your camera, and you can get what you kind of want on the back of your camera to look like with your finished product, then it just makes a hell of a lot easier in post. But I think, to his point, it can kind of force a lot of photographers to have the kind of same look and feel. I think a lot of photographers they maybe without thinking about it, mimic a lot of what they like by other photographers.
Yeah.
And then they try and get the same look and feel. I think you'll find, if you take a look at some of my images, that I kind of have a different way of processing too. I like to bring out stuff and kind of force the viewer to look at things, which is probably more the journalistic side. So it's less is more kind of thing.
Yeah.
You just kind of, it's all about, it's as a photographer, I always tell people this, like almost all of it is just getting out there and taking photos kind of thing, being in the right place with your gear ready to go. And it, even if your gear is an iPhone, people hate on the iPhone all the time. Everyone's like, oh, stupid iPhone, new iPhone. Why are they bringing the new iPhone? I'm like, do you know what that camera is capable of that they're putting on the new one?
Yeah. You're looking for the, I just got the iPhone 7S with the telephoto and the zoom.
Is that 1.8 aperture? There's some amazing low light photography. Like, dude, that thing is going to be, it's game changing. It's
game changer.
It's like having a DSLR in your pocket almost. Like,
that's so great.
So it's like, and people who knock it, like photographers who go, oh, it's going to flood the market with photographers, are just insecure about their own skills.
Well, it's also already done that anyway with editing and everything.
Yeah, totally,
you know, I've taken some photos that I look at and just go, oh, you know, like concert photos.
Yeah.
And people are like, holy shit, that's incredible. Yeah. And it's just on the iPhone 5S. I can't wait for the 7S. You know what I mean?
Stone Age, man. I don't even know why that
or
works.
7, whatever it is. Big. I got the big one. Hey, I got the big one.
Hell yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the vibe, your shoot for the Sharks. Were you in the locker room after the loss, or did you stay the fuck out of there?
No, I did, actually. Well, they didn't let – they were, like, really selective on who could go in. I think one of the media people on the team went in. I stayed outside, and it was pretty solemn. But, I mean, the dudes, they played so well. And to get that far, I mean, it was epic.
It's so fucked about the Sharks because they of course they went to the Stanley Cup this year. I think it was the 25th anniversary of the team.
I actually painted one of the posters for the 26th anniversary.
That's badass. I watched season one at the Cow Palace. I never forgot it.
No way.
Yeah. I lived in San Fran,
nice.
I would get free tickets all the time, and it wouldn't even be full because they were building the Shark Tank.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would go down there all the time. Joe Paganelli. A good friend of mine, he was a huge Sharks fan, and we would go and just see Sharks and early on, and it's crazy to think 25 years, but they almost get there a couple times, and then it just fucking falls apart.
Watch out this year, though, man. Like, and I they had some injuries coming into the Stanley Cup too that kind of screwed them over. So I think this is, I've been shooting a lot of the prospects, the young kids coming up, and they're super athletic, like. Good guys. So hopefully I think they got a good chance, and then they got a lot of the older guys are still hanging on for this year as well. So it was an experience, and believe me it was not lost on me to be able to shoot the Stanley. I was shooting like a game here and there for them kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then playoffs were coming up. I just done the poster. They did six posters for the 25th anniversary.
Wow.
And they gave them away as like the collector's
and
item.
Did you paint it or draw it?
Yeah, I painted it.
Wow. Oil or what do you paint?
So I use airbrush and an acrylic. And,
oh, sick.
They made a little video, and it's pretty. It's on my YouTube, but you can if you just Google 25th anniversary number six poster, that's me. So they made these posters, and then after that, they're like, hey, are you interested in shooting playoffs? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I started shooting those, and then playoffs turned to holy shit, Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And then it was Stanley Cup, so it was incredible.
That's so great. Well. It was great to meet you, and it's funny because Dean Carr always puts together great a great squad, you know.
Right on.
And I've never been on this and been disappointed. There's always artists on it and musicians and all different types of people. Fantastic. There's people that have been on this trip 3, 4, 5 times, like myself, multiple times.
Yeah.
And you could tell that people just absolutely love great white sharks. There's something about, to me, the great white shark and a king cobra that are just completely like, that's real? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure, man.
Now, let's tell everybody what your Instagram is because I want them to see your stuff. And this episode is going to drop, I think, Monday. And the problem is we're just... Or late Monday night, and we're just getting in, so a lot of the photos won't be up until the midweek or so.
Yeah. If you give me into the weekend, check back on the weekend, and I'll definitely have.
So, what's your Instagram? Stories.
It's UNART, UNART.com. That's my website, and that's my Twitter handle, and Instagram is UNART.
Dope. So great to have you, man.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.